That's fine. So, I'm Carol Stengel, and the topic of my talk is quantum loops and topological order, and the choice of this particular topic is related to essentially the work that I started doing at Microsoft when I was a postdoc there with Mike, and so it has a certain historical value for me, and I hope to convey some interesting questions. Some of them are still open that relate to this subject. And a number of collaborators over the years include a number of people in Station Q, Mike, of course, Chetan, Zhenghan Wong, and Kevin Walker, as well as Simon Trepst. All of them are here, I believe, and Matthias Troyer from ETH Zurich. Now, even though a number of slides were lifted from Simon's talk, he looks unhappy already looking at my slides, as you can see, but you know, I hope I wouldn't disappoint him too much. If I'm allowed to spend a couple of minutes also remembering certain things about my first meeting Mike. I want to go back to early 2000s, and Mike at that point was working on some rather obscure topics such as topological quantum computation, which you can see wasn't really appreciated by the community as evidenced by the comment that he received by the editor of Science. I'm sorry to say that the manuscript has not been assigned sufficient priority, essentially, it wasn't even sent to the referees. At about the same time, Chetan and myself wrote a paper on fractionalization and topological order in some microscopic model in two dimensions, which was my first foray into the subject. The paper, in the hindsight, wasn't particularly deep, it was a naive paper. We also tried to send it to Science, and it was turned out the same way as Mike's paper, not because it was too naive or not particularly deep, but rather because we didn't appeal to a wide enough range of people, because we only mentioned superconductivity topology, gauge theory, and fault-tolerant quantum computation, and apparently molecular biologists were not included in the list of people who might be interested in the subject. So, anyway, that was my first foray into the subject, and soon thereafter I came to Microsoft to work with Mike as a postdoc, and one of the few things, one of the first things that I've done, probably my second or third week at Microsoft, is, we climbed Mount Rainier, so this is Mike, Chetan, and myself, but climbing mountains wasn't the hardest thing about working with Mike, at least not at the beginning. As Chetan has already conveyed to you, there was a certain language disconnect, and, with Mike as an accomplished mathematician, and even though my PhD advisor was a mathematician, I still think of myself as a physicist. I didn't have enough formal mathematical training. So sometimes Chetan was around to translate. He was good. But when Chetan wasn't around, I sort of had to make my way and learn some math. But it went both ways, because Mike also had to learn some physics along the way, and with a certain amount of personal pride, I can say that I contributed to that process, and I was particularly proud to see how Mike learned to talk to physicists. Of course, as a topologist, he thinks about some complicated manifolds, but then he needs to explain to the physicist why things like this are interesting. So physicists are typically not interested in manifolds, they're interested in perhaps particles propagating, and that sort of these are the parts of the particles, but this is a talk from the conference where the experimentalists were present, and so Mike made it even more accessible to experimentalists. And this is actually an actual slide from Mike's talk at Emergent Phenomena in Quantum Whole Systems. I believe Jim was in the audience there, and so that's what motivated the further developments in the field. That's from the same talk, so you can see the physical gadgets. Sorry?
He got the time order wrong. He puts a count in and out comes the battery.
That's right. Anyway, so back to the subject of my talk, and that is quantum loop gases. And what I think about them is, this is a subset of models with topological order, and these are probably the easiest ones to understand and to visualize. And in that sense, they can serve as easing models of topological phases. And by easing models, I don't mean easing conformal theory. I mean literally the simple statistical mechanical easing model. And in our thinking, we were motivated by, among others, by a nice paper by Alexei Kitaev, who introduced the toric code, which is an archetypal example of such loop gases. This is a particularly simple model because it's exactly soluble. And in fact, you can easily see the exact solution. Well, basically, it contains spins that live on the links of the lattice, and there are two types of terms in the Hamiltonian, a vertex term that is the product of z component of four spins around each side, and then there is a dual Plaquette term that is the product of sigma x's on all links around, on all bonds around the Plaquette. And, well, this Hamiltonian has only local terms, and more importantly, so this term is similar to the ring exchanges. That's for people who are familiar with the various spin Hamiltonians with the ring exchanges. But back to this Hamiltonian has only local terms, and all terms commute. And therefore, there is an exact solution moreover, not only you know the ground state, you know all excitations and so on. And basically, you can first look at the first term. The first term is minimized by an even number of down spins around a vertex. And what you can do is you can come up with a simple graphical representation of every single term that of every single state that minimizes the first term. And by just simply replacing down spins by the painted line segments, what you get is you get a collection of loops on the lattice. And what the second term does, it simply flips these colored loop segments around every plaquette on which it acts, and in that sense, it acts like a ring exchange term. There are two types of excitations. There are electric charges, electric quote-unquote charges, which are open loop ends, and there are also magnetic Z2 vortices, which are plaquettes that are giving a minus sign when they're flipped. And there is a nice feature of that model is that you get some non-trivial statistics even from there. You get a minus sign by taking one type of particle around another. For example, when you take a an open the end of line and move it all the way around, you get a minus sign if this blue plaquette corresponds to the Z2 vortex. So. As I have mentioned, this is indeed a quantum loop gas. In fact, the ground state is a superposition of various collections of loops. It has a ground state degeneracy on the torus, which is one of the hallmarks of topological order, and that is easy to see by defining topological sectors, which are in this case defined by the winding number parity. And that is simply the number of loops that cross any particular cut on the torus. Let me do that somehow. Oh, yeah. All right. So these are the cuts that you can make and then just count the number of lines that cross this cut. So this, it's even in this case. It's odd in this case. And, of course, the plaquette flips, the quantum dynamics, if you wish, preserve that quantity, they preserve the parity, not the number of loops, but its parity. And, therefore, we get these topological sectors, which are, once again, the hallmark of topological order. And so, basically, what we learn from looking at Kitaev's model is that there are three conditions that define this type of topological phases, so-called isotopy, loop fugacity, and surgery. And I mean, we've seen them all, but I'll explain what they are once again. So, basically, the isotopy is the property of the invariance of the wave function under smooth deformations. So that is if you change the shape of your microscopic objects that form, change the shape of loops that are formed of microscopic objects, then the wave function remains the same. Fugacity, in principle, is the property that when you add an extra loop, you might get a factor of d. For the toric code, it was 1. In fact, for all Z2 models, it's 1. And the wave function, the ground state wave function, in this case, can be written as just the collection of over all pictures, snapshots with loops, this curly L, multiplied by d, this fugacity, times to the number of loops in that snapshot. And finally, there should be a surgery relation. I'll talk a bit more about this. That relates picture in which the loops are cut and reconnect in some way. Without a surgery, there is an infinite ground state degeneracy. All winding numbers on the torus are conserved because you cannot change them. And so you already might get an idea that something wrong will go with topological order in this case. So you need that. Let me just quickly comment on the consistency between isotopy or diisotopy. By diisotopy, we coined this term to combine isotopy and this the fugacity of small loops, if you wish. So there should be consistency between surgery and these rules, and let me just quickly show that to you. If all terms in the Hamiltonian are local, then locally you don't know how the ends of these red lines are connected, and this is one possible connection. That gives you the... once again, you can erase a loop using this rule, replacing it by the fugacity D, and that gives you a... after which you can stretch this little wiggle back to that form using the isotopy relation. And that gives you a simple condition that one is alpha times D. On the other hand, the loops could be connected in a different way, in which case you have to eliminate this loop, get a factor of D on this side, and so the condition in that case would be D is equal to alpha. And, of course, combining these two, you get that you only have two possibilities here. Alpha and D are either plus one or minus one. A plus one solution we already saw, the toric code is an example of that, and in general this corresponds to the Z2 gauge theories. On the other hand, the minus one is an interesting theory and so on, right? It turns out to be a double U1 Chern-Simons theory with semions, and this kind of theories recently came back to attention. A very similar theory was recycled by Levin and Stern in the context of fractionalized topological insulators. Back then there were no topological insulators, or at least nobody knew about them, as far as I can tell. What we were interested in is non-abelian. Both of these theories that you can get from this simple construction are abelian theories. Now, what we were interested in were non-abelian theories, and since you couldn't get anything from the simple surgery relation, what we had to do is we had to enhance, if you wish, the surgery relation. And the simplest thing you can do, instead of introducing the rule that would cut and reconnect two loops, you could cut and reconnect three loops. And so there would be some relation on all possible ways of cutting and reconnecting three loops. And here I simplified it, or in principle it would come with all possible coefficients. I simplified using the condition that the theory is isotropic, but in principle it's not really required. So if you impose the condition of isotropy, then there's only one free parameter here. Anyway, so you can play the same game as before, and that is cup the so you can cap this this picture in any way you want, and by simply removing loops, replacing them by the fugacity, you get the corresponding algebraic equations. Now, of course, you can do it in more than one way, and if you do it in a different way, you get a different equation that is shown right here. Each of these pictures corresponds to a single loop going through times some factors. So you just collect these factors and get another equation. It turns out that all other ways would lead to one of these two equations, so you don't really learn anything new. But solving these equations, you find the old roots that we already knew, but there is also a new root, d equals root 2. This is an interesting theory that corresponds to the first non-abelian theory in this series. So, in principle, you can play this game with any number of strands, so this relation of, on any number of strands, and instead of doing the consistency in the dumb way, you can actually use algebra. These turn out to be Jones-Wenzel projectors. And so you can construct a series of theories by doing it this way. All these models are parametrized by the parameter D, which is given by this simple equation. The well, the D, the loop amplitude, corresponds to different values of K, where K plus 1 is the number of strands on which this surgery is acting. So we saw the theories with K equals 1 and K equals 2 so far. Now, formally, they're related to the double SU2 level K Chern-Simons theories, and anything from K going down from 2, 3, and so on should be non-abelian by just that construction. So that looks very interesting, but what I personally was interested in is how do you construct microscopic theories out of this, how you implement these rules in terms of microscopic Hamiltonians. And before we go there, point that I didn't make is that the excitations, so what does it mean that we are dealing with non-abelian theories? The excitations are typically violations of the ground state conditions, such as broken loops, so the end points of the loops. And you can see easily why going beyond the two-line condition will give you a non-abelian theory, and that you just do by playing with the pictures. So let's say you have four particles, which are ends of the loops, and you simply exchange the second and the fourth. And if you have a two-line condition, then you can cut and reconnect them, and you end up with a picture that relates back to the original one with probably possibly some phase in front. But this is an abelian theory. On the other hand, if you only have a condition on three lines, so you do the same thing, you can cut and reconnect these three lines in all possible ways. But no matter, well, if you do it explicitly, you end up in a superposition of these two pictures, and these two pictures are not related to one another by any terms in the Hamiltonian. And so what that tells you is that exchanging two particles leaves you in a superposition of different ground states, and that's the hallmark of non-abelian statistics. So it's all there. You can actually calculate the braiding matrices by playing these simple games. But as I have mentioned, what we're really interested in is how can one construct a microscopic model whose low-energy physics can be described by non-abelian quantum loop gas. And the first step in actually trying to see what our chances are was looking at whether we can learn anything from the classical stat mech. And that is by appealing to the plasma analogy. A plasma analogy deals with the fact that a square norm of a wave function could be related to partition function of some stat-mech model. And in this case, it turns out to be a partition function of so-called O-N loop model, which appears as, if you wish, an extension, a generalization of the high-temperature expansion for O-N classical spin models. And these high-temperature expansions always generate loops with certain fugacity. And so this is the partition function. This model has been solved. In particular, the phase diagram has been mapped out by Blurty and Inhouse. And what they found out is that the loop model is only critical in the region that surrounded by these red lines. So it's only here. So the point that would correspond to the to our quantum model would correspond to this parameter x being equal to 1. That is when the loops have no tension. And so these are these magic numbers that are shown in blue. You can also try to fake this model by the green points, but it has its deficiency. I wouldn't even go there. One way or the other, the relation between n, the classical fugacity of loops, and the quantum dimension of loops is n equals d squared. And so what we learn from this phase diagram is that once you go beyond n equals 2 or d bigger than square root of 2, the loops become short, and so you wouldn't be able to get actually any interesting long wavelength physics out of that. And so let me just list here quickly the requirements for a topological phase. And in order for the excitations to be deconfined, you need a critical loop gas, because you essentially don't want loops to have any tension. And what we learn from the O-N model is that you can't hope to get a critical loop gas if N is greater than 2, or correspondingly D is greater or equal than root 2. And with Jones-Wenzel in mind, which gives us a set of points for which we can hope to find this topological model, only d equals root 2 can possibly be the case. Now, the well-defined braiding statistics would require a gap in the spectrum, One thing that we were able to show with Mike and Chaitin is that surgery is actually required to make loop gases gapped, and I'll go back to that point later. However, in order for a Jones Fensel projector for the surgery on three lines to work in the D equals root 2 case, three loops should be able to come together on a scale, on a microscopic scale. And there is an argument due to Odette Schramm that three loops never statistically come close together. And so even if you explicitly write the Jones-Fensel projector in your microscopic theory, it just wouldn't have any effect because, in a sense, it has no chance to act on anything, and therefore it wouldn't open a gap. So that seems like a problem. And so we're trying to go in different ways about this problem. And one of the ways that we try to explore with Simon and Matthias, as well as Chaitin, is to construct a model that would contain the terms that I described. This is the these are the d-isotopy rules. That is, the loops come with a certain fugacity d, and the loops can actually move around. So this is a lattice model. The Hamiltonian looks somewhat complicated, but what it does is precisely the things that I've described before. It allows loops to bend for free, and it allows a creation and annihilation of loops with a certain fugacity. Now, this is the vertex constraint, and the rest is the quantum dynamics. So I don't want to go through the exact details of how these terms work, but they do. Now, as I said, the three-term projector wouldn't work. On the other hand, the three-strand surgery relation wouldn't work. However, we need some surgery in order to open a gap. That is something that we have proved with Mike and Chaitin. So local changes, short of cutting and reconnecting loops, are too inefficient in changing the loop length, and so they give rise to a slow gapless mode in these types of models. So this is a somewhat obscure paper. I think it's not fully appreciated by the community for a simple fact that in that paper we constructed two Hamiltonians which have exactly the same ground state. One is gapped, one is gapless. The reason it's interesting is that people who are talking a lot about entanglement entropy these days, if they try to get too much mileage out of the statement that you can say something about the ground state, something about the model by looking at its ground state, should be mindful of the example constructed here when the same exact ground state corresponds to both gapped and gapless states. Anyway, going back here, since we cannot implement a three-strand projector, what we can do is we can actually introduce some frustration in our Hamiltonian, and that is try to see what if we have D corresponding to a topological phase, that is root 2, but however we'll implement the projector that corresponds to D equals 1. And we can try to do this. We can try to do that with a small perturbative parameter epsilon, and see. So now the terms are incompatible in a sense that the ground state is not really annihilated by all terms in the Hamiltonian. But the question is, since the state without a projector is gapless, adding a projector will hopefully open a gap. And the question is, which of the phases will it go open a gap? Which phase will we go into? And this question has been studied numerically. And the answer to that is, well, first of all, you can confirm indeed, that's the correlations, the autocorrelations in time. And you see that, well, the exponential fits are nearly perfect here, while the power law fits are rather poor. This was done for both d equals 1 and d equals root 2. And so you indeed, from these plots, you see that you do open a gap. But now the question is, what is the phase in which you open a gap into? And so in order to do that, we looked at the Hausdorff dimensions of the longest loops in this system. And one thing that we know, once again from the plasma analogy, is that for the toric code, like for the n equals 1 models, the Hausdorff dimensionality of the loops is 7 quarters. On the other hand, for the n equals 2, that is d being root 2, the non-abelian, the hopefully non-abelian phase, the Hausdorff dimensionality would be 3/2. And by actually, and so these are just the simulations of that, and the answer, the unfortunate answer, is that when you take the loop gas with d equals root 2 and introduce a tiny surgery that is incompatible with that d, even though you open a gap, what you immediately find is the abelian phase. So essentially, the system goes into a toric code-like state, even though you introduce a d that would sort of, you would hope, would nudge it towards the non-abelian phase. So that is a rather unfortunate result that came out of that. So the gapped phase is abelian, and the reason for that is perhaps that the fugacity d acts only on small microscopic loops, but the surgery, the wrong surgery epsilon, even if such a term is tiny, it acts on large loops, and therefore that's the relevant perturbation that drives your system towards the abelian fixed point. Now the question is, can other terms help maybe? Can we have a gapped, a local gap non-abelian loop gas?
Question. In your previous slide, can we see this Hausdorff?
Well, so
is it visible on the slide?
So what you do is you compare it with the simulations that Matthias and Simon did for just the loop gases with this dimensionality, and you see what happens here.
What? Both lines of data collapse.
Yeah.
So the curve on the upper right has four curves on top of each other, and they only collapse for that experiment.
You want to go back?
Well, kind of a related question, which is, what motivated you to put these pictures on your view graph?
So these? Well, these are just the results of the of
what are they?
Yeah. What?
What's being plotted?
What could some?
So this is the distribution.
That you learned from.
No. Yeah, so what you learn is, essentially, this is the distribution of loop lengths. And what you learn from them is the Hausdorff dimensionality, right? That's, so, yeah, there, yeah, so, well, look, I mean, this is the data collapse. So these are the loop length rescaled with the length of the system to the appropriate power. And what you see is how this is the data collapse. What you see, these plots, even though the plot itself may not be particularly meaningful. The important thing is that the data collapses when scaled with the appropriate length. Does that make sense? And so you do the same here, and you see that the data collapses when you scale it with 7/4 rather than 3/2, and that's an indication of actually going into the abelian phase rather than non-abelian phase. The one interesting thing is that this didn't occur to us right away, but the notion that in order to go into a gapped phase, what you need to have, there is a beautiful theorem due to Matt Hastings, that is all correlation functions of local operator decays exponentially in the ground state of local gapped Hamiltonian. And so if you can locate a correlation function of local operators that does not decay exponentially, that automatically means that you cannot have a hope for a gapped state. And in fact, the Plaquette flips on long critical loops turn out to be correlated. And that's sort of easy to understand, because if you cut and reconnect two loops here and cut and reconnect two loops here, when you do one of these cutting, you always change the number of loops by one. On the other hand, when you do both of these flips, then the change in the number of loops is zero, and it's not just the combined effect of, it's not always the combined effect of these two changes. And since your wave function, the amplitude of the wave function, is sensitive to the total number of loops, that actually introduces some correlations between these perfectly local operators. And that has also been looked at numerically by Simon and Matthias. And what they found is a power law correlations between these operators for D not being equal to 1. And so, in a sense, this is a no-go theorem. the non-abelian loop gases can be ground states of gapped local Hamiltonians, at least in the way that I presented them. And so I want to conclude now, because I think I'm at the end of my time, with, it seems like what I presented to you is a dead end. Well, it's a dead end along a particular path to the quantum non-abelian loop gases. There are, however, possible ways out, and these relate to fairly interesting developments in the field. The non-abelian topological phases require either non-local Hamilton. So what we were trying to do, we were trying to implement a local Hamiltonian with an. We also relied on the plasma analogy, and the plasma analogy relied on a certain structure of the inner product. That is, different loop pictures with different loops were orthogonal to one another in order for that to work. So something has to give, obviously. So either we should look at non-local Hamiltonians, which doesn't have a particular aesthetic appeal to me. The nature likes to have local Hamiltonians, after all. You can try to implement them by some artificial ways of constructing Hamiltonians, but I don't have high hopes there. Or one could hope to modify the inner product. So the local degrees of freedom don't have to so the degrees of freedom that the loops are made of don't have to be orthogonal to one another. And this route has been exploited in a beautiful paper by Paul Findlay, who showed that modifying the inner products could actually, he didn't show that the gap will open, but there is a serious hope that the gap might open if you modify the inner product. Another route that sort of goes along the same, another way out is to consider double-stranded loops. Or trivalent graphs. And this is essentially the route that was taken by Turayev, Vera Levenwen, Findlay, Frankin, and Valens, Shamon, and Wen. If you allow double-stranded loops to branch, forming trivalent graphs, then you don't have problems with Jones-Wenzel projectors, because by forcing two loops together at every given point, you can bring essentially four of them easily close to one another, because they come in twos every time. And so a simple Jones-Wenzel projector works in this case, opening the gap. There are some downsides. As far as we know, only 12 site interactions are known to work. One interesting thing that hasn't been explored so far, to my knowledge, is whether you can form double strands energetically from single strands as opposed to by imposing some hardcore constraint. And this is essentially my conclusion, and I'm ending right here.
Thank you very much. Questions for Carol that have not already been asked?
There are these spin models, these Skateyev-type models that have non-abelian phases. Is the point they can't be related to loop models somehow, or
hint on how to? All right. So first of all, I have to say that these models, the ones that I was talking about, are all PNT invariant, and at least the original honeycomb lattice model introduced by Alexei is not, because in order to open a gap there, at least you need to turn the magnetic field on. There is a modification due to Yu and Hong Yao, which, although it's not explicitly, it doesn't have the parity reversal symmetry, I'm not exactly certain whether or not you can formulate that in the terms similar to that. I mean, there might be a hole, but I don't know how to think about it that way. But at least explicitly, it's not P invariant. It is T invariant, right? I believe.
The model's T invariant.
Yeah, the state. So here, even the ground state preserves P and T invariants, and so in that sense, it's different from your model. In your model, the time reversal is spontaneously broken in the ground state.
So it seems that the main difference between the double-stranded loops and
Once again, the model we are dealing with is, well, if you can implement the projectors, it will conserve the number of loops modulo something, right? In the simplest case, the parity of loop. If you go to d equals root 2, the number of loops will be conserved mod 3, I believe, and so on. So it's I mean, when you have a relation k plus 1 strengths, you conserve the number of loops mod k plus 1. No. I mean, so the trivalent graphs are the double-stranded loops. I mean, if you can just zoom in and think of each line as made of two, it's a double-stranded loop, and the rules are exactly the same as they are for the loops. There is just a hardcore constraint that the loops always come in pairs. And that allows you to bring more than two to the same place and statistically.
Can we go back a couple of slides with the two loops and the two Hamiltonians?
Which ones?
Not that one. The ones that showed how two Hamiltonians don't generate something different.
Not this one.
Keep going.
All right.
Forward. Not backwards. Forward.
Oh, forward. Sorry.
Forward by quite a bit now.
All right. Here? Oh, here. More. I don't think there is a Hamiltonian
more.
Past that point.
More. More. There.
This is not about a Hamiltonian. This is the statement about operators in the Hamiltonian. Well, so there are terms in the Hamiltonian that we introduced that allow you to cut and reconnect two loops.
Yes.
And now the question is, do the expectation values of these terms in the ground state, in the proposed ground state, do they have a non-vanishing correlation or not? So, I mean, in other ways, are they correlated exponentially or in a power law-like fashion?
So, of course, you get a different topology in the plane from the after. From both loops, it's a different topology than both loops.
By topology, you mean simply the number of loops?
No. Before I started, I had a loop inside a loop in the plane.
Oh, but the way, yeah, sure. So the nesting number changes. However, the wave function, as we introduced, it doesn't care about the nesting numbers. It just, yeah. So I mean, you're right. The nesting number does change here. Sure. But I'm not certain where.
I'm asking the question whether you can make a double-stranded loop from single-stranded loops. I think you just did.
Well, but there is no hard constraint that it should always come in double strands.
Peace.
Right.
It's just that there's some amplitude for it to happen.
But it turns out still that you cannot beat the argument that if there is no reason for the loops to always come together in double strands, then the projectors would not statistically work. That's the statement that I have made, and I stand by it.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to make a comment on the application of this theorem. And you gave a kind of example where you said you have an example here of two Hamiltonians, one which is Gaussian and one which is not.
It's not a counterexample to Hastings' theorem, if that's what you mean, because all correlation functions in those two states are actually short-ranged.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. And this is a loophole in that argument. And that's why this can happen here and not in the other case.
I'm sorry?
No, sorry, we have a question over here.
Just the expectation value of that flip.
No.
It's local.
It is.
Yeah. So it's not a counterexample to.
No, but you have a description.
Oh, but that's the description of the ground state.
What kind of thing
No, but you know, once again, the operator that I'm looking at is perfectly local. And so the expectation values of two local operators turn out to be correlated. Right.
And this is because on one of your previous slides, you showed that the amplitude to have even or odd number of loops was different, right?
Right.
So that's why you would expect that this becomes correlated. And numerically observed, it's correlated, yeah?
Right. Thanks.
Sorry, I just... Oh, can I speak?
Yeah.
It's my part.
So I don't think we should be too discouraged by this observation of the Dennis and the subsequent no-go theorem, because even if you implement the John Spencer projector weakly, what you'll see is that the gap above the ground state closes, but only algebraically will be some power law to that closing, whereas the degeneracy of the ground state is presumably exact of the exponential corrections. So this is something we're not very familiar with, but it suggests that there could be sort of pseudo-topological phases that have ground state degeneracy exponentially tight, but then power law of the states coming in above. That still seems like an interesting problem.
So you want to hit some sweet spot in finite size system?
One more comment in this vein. Actually, so in the Fibonacci case, you can take Levin-Wen and rewrite it as a loop model with this different inner product. And so since that we rigorously know is in a topological
right.
phase, that's at least a proof of principle that there exists a Hamiltonian acting on nothing other than loops that has a topological phase. So then the interesting question, of course, comes now, is that the only case, or can you find much simpler Hamiltonians that do that.
Is the Hamiltonian still local when written in terms of loops?
The Hamiltonian is still local.
Right.
The degrees of freedom are local. It's only the ground state you characterize by this non-local. But it's totally local.
And I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm still looking.
Sorry, but how does that fit with your criterion of no broken time reversal symmetry? I mean,
Levin-Wen models don't break.
No broken time.
There's still no
proof. Yeah.
Are there more questions, or should we take our... Maybe we should have our public.
Yeah.